It is Monday, and it's time once again for another edition of the Lunch Special right here on KZSU Stanford.
Oh, God said to Abraham, kill me a son. Abe said, man, you must be putting me on. God said, no. Abe said, what? God said, you can do what you want, Abe, but next time you see me coming, you better run. Well, Abe said, well, you want this killing done? God said, hold on Highway 61. Well, Georgia Sam, he had a bloody nose. Welfare department, they wouldn't give him no clothes. He asked poor Howard, where can I go? Howard said, there's only one place I know. Sam said, tell me quick, man, I got to run. Oh, Howard just pointed with his gun and said, that way down Highway 61. Finger said to Louis the King, I got 40 red, white, blue shoestrings and 1,000 telephones that don't ring. Do you know where I can get rid of these things? And Louis the King said, let me think for a minute, son. Then he said, yes, I think it can be easily done. Just take everything down to Highway 61. Told her first father that things weren't right. My complexion, she says, is much too white. He said, come here and step into the light. He says, you're right. Let me tell the second mother this has been done. But the second mother was with the seventh son, and they were both out on Highway 61. He was very bored, trying to create a next world war. He found a promoter who nearly fell off the floor. He said, I never engaged in this kind of thing before, but yes, I think it can be very easily done. We'll just put some bleachers out in the sun and have it on Highway 61.
And Bob, little Bobby Dylan for your listening pleasure this Monday afternoon. This is the show that's completely unpredictable because another Stanford professor brings in their music. And today we're honored to have Michael Marinen, professor of art history from the art department?
Yes.
Welcome to KZSU, Mr. Marinen. Professor Marinen.
Please, Bert. Michael's fine.
Okay, all right. My professor's going to kick my butt if I don't get this right. Why the Bob Dylan?
Well, as we were talking ahead of time, I grew up in St. Paul.
Oh, so, didn't he too?
He did too. That's not really the connection, though. The connection is about this album, Bob Dylan's Highway 61, was one of the first times that I had really any consciousness of anything other than California music and the Beach Boys.
Interesting.
I grew up in a house of rather modest means, and we had terrible sound system. But my friend had his father worked for UNIVAC, and he was a engineering techie. Mm-hmm. He had built a Heath kit, and he had AR speakers.
Wow.
And I would go over there and listen to music with my friend Ted. And one day Ted said, you've got to listen to this thing that my brother brought home. And it was Bob Dylan. And it blew my mind. So that's why it starts. Also, I mean, somebody my age, how could you not start with Bob Dylan?
That's right. Well, you are of that age.
Yes.
So now we have somebody to blame. No, just kidding. Is there a theme to the music you brought today?
Well, there is a kind of a theme. I've been thinking about it for a couple of weeks, actually, about what to do on this show, because it scared the daylights out of me. I listened to a lot of old vinyl, and I started to think about the songs that meant something to me. Mm-hmm. And it became very clear to me that the other thing was California. I mean, you know, we're on a beautiful day in California today. My friends in Minnesota have their first snowfall.
Right.
So here I was, this kind of dorky guy growing up in Minnesota with cold weather and not really knowing much about the rest of the world, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But California was always this thing through the music of the Beach Boys. So it's that lingers, as you'll see, I think, as we go on here today. And finally, I ended up in California, completely unplanned, here at Stanford.
And we're going to find out about that journey closer to the bottom of the hour. Right now, we'll get to some more music. Who do we got queued up next?
The band.
All right.
Standing by your window in pain, pistol in your hand, and I beg you, dear Molly girl, try and understand your man the best.
Soulful sounds of the band here on KZSU's Lunch Special. Every Monday from 12 to 1, we bring in a different professor. Today, Professor of Art History, Michael Marin. And that was great, Michael.
Thanks. The band was very special in my college days, actually. I guess I didn't really avoid the Beatle phenomenon, but I was much more attached to the band, to Creedence, that sort of mainstream, partly because I was in the middle of America, but the mainstream,
yeah,
American rock and roll.
And they were the real blue-collar, working-class kind of bands, too.
Yeah.
They weren't about all that glitz and glamour. Yeah. They were about meat and potatoes.
And part of that comes from my own background, which was, I'm sure my parents thought that they were middle-class, but in retrospect, it was the low end of the scale, I think.
What did they do?
Well, my father was a salesman. My mom was a mom.
Yeah, when you could still do that.
Yeah.
Well, no, those were the days, weren't they?
Yeah.
What do we got up next?
We're going to listen to Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young.
Aha. Maybe Neil's listening from up on the hill.
That would be nice.
Soulful side of the 60s and 70s with DJ Michael Maronin. How's that sound?
It sounds great, but I have to tell you that, you know, a lot of us tend to forget what it was like in the 70s trying to stay out of the war. And this song was very important to me because that's how a lot of us felt, helpless.
Yeah.
And particularly if you had a bad draft number.
That's right.
So... these are the years of the protests, and I was pretty active in Minnesota in those things. And,
really?
And then a car hit me on my motorcycle one day going to work, and it smashed my foot, and that was the end of my worrying about the Army. So,
wow. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. But nonetheless, that was, for me, an important period of my life. And I think that a lot of people of my generation have... suppress those thoughts, those memories. They were tough times.
Yeah, they were.
We saw a lot of friends come home, not in good shape.
And did you have friends that didn't come home?
Well, I did.
Yeah, I tell you, that was the thing about the Vietnam War. It touched a large part of the American society,
yeah.
And they say that that's different. It's different now.
Yeah.
that they've compartmentalized it.
Yeah, yeah. And well, I mean, you know, trying to do your student deferment and stay out of the draft, and the whole thing was took a lot of energy, and it was pretty scary.
Try the Air National Guard.
Yeah.
That's another subject we don't want to touch right now because it's too big. What do we got up next for the folks?
I think I have to. Is that right? Number four.
Number four.
Okay. This chronicles my move from Minnesota to New York for graduate school.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can imagine a long-haired sort of country boy in his rider truck driving across country with his best friend Michael and his girlfriend Janet. To move to graduate school in New York City, you know, on Fifth Avenue. This was a big change. We're getting to California by the back road, so to speak.
Taking the long way around.
Anyway, you get to New York, it's a different world. And one of the things that one discovered was the Ziggy Stardust and David Bowie.
Okay, let's check it out.
Didn't know what time it was, the lights were low, oh, oh. I leaned back on my radio, oh, oh. Some cat was laying down some rock and roll, not a soul he said. Then the loud sound, it seemed to fade. Came back like a slow voice on a wave of fate. That weren't no DJ, that was hazy. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He's told us not to blow it, cause he knows it's all worthwhile. He told me, let the children use it. Let the children use it. Let all the children do get. Starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'll blow our minds. There's a starman
Sounds of Yesteryear here on the mighty KZSU and the lunch special with your host, Bird. And today, Professor of Art History, Michael Marinin, in case you just tune in. He's picking the tunes today. And what did you want to talk about that particular song?
Well, Michael, we were talking just now about, while it was playing, about New York in the late 70s.
Yeah, you said you got there in 73.
Got there in 73 for graduate school. It was a pretty rough spot in those days.
Speak about why that was. It was a weird time.
The city was broke. People hardly remember that anymore.
New York went bankrupt.
I mean, my graduate school is on Fifth Avenue, right across from Central Park, right near the Metropolitan Museum. And, I mean, this was not a place you could even go into in the daytime and feel good about it.
Wow.
So there was this, it was really gritty, you know. And one of the things, I mean, for me, coming from the Midwest, I mean, this was, on one hand, it was thrilling. On the other hand, I was scared to death.
Take your life in your own hands.
Well,
and leave
your
house.
And it was, you know, and I was a graduate student, so I was broke, and that meant, you know, one couldn't really, you know, get out and about the way one liked. But you know, you had a circle of friends, discovered aspects of the music scene. The reason that I picked Ziggy Stardust is because it sort of captures something of, I guess, what was my starstruck feeling about being in the city. I mean, I was also crazy about Lou Reed at this time. This was not the Lou Reed of the Velvet days. This was, you know, already the Transformer and sort of the sort of glam moment. And so the whole thing sort of gelled around being in the city, going to school, and sleeping. And the rest was all academic, I guess you might say. But it was a great time. I wouldn't have traded it for anything. And that led finally in 78 to the next sort of big move in my life, which really was for me monumental, and that was to go to Paris to do my, I was there for several years to work on my doctoral dissertation. So in the middle of a huge snowstorm in January of 1978, my friend Janet and I got on a plane and left, and we ended up in Paris. And you know, first it's like, what am I doing here? I mean, I can hardly speak French. You know, as usual, we're broke. And the song that I played over and over again in my depression is the next song.
What is it?
It's California.
Uh-huh.
Joni Mitchell.
Sitting in a park in Paris, friends, reading the news, and it sure looks bad. They won't give peace a chance. That was just a dream some of us had. Still a lot of lands to see, but I wouldn't want to stay here. It's too old and cold and settled in its ways here. Oh, but California, California, coming home. I'm gonna see the folks I dig. I'll even kiss a sunset peak. California, I'm coming home. Who did the goat dance very well? He gave me back my smile, but he kept my camera to sell. Oh, the rogue, the red, red rogue. He cooked good omelets and stews, and I might have stayed on with him there, but my heart cried out for you. California, oh, California, coming home. Oh, make me feel good, rock and roll band. I'm your biggest fan, California, I'm coming home. Oh, it gets so lonely when you're walking and the streets are full of strangers. All the news on your ear just give you the blues. Down a red dirt road, there were lots of pretty people there, reading Rolling Stone, reading Vogue. They said, how long can you hang around? I said, a week, maybe two. just until my skin turns brown and I'm going home to California. California, I'm coming home. Oh, will you take me as I am? Strung out on another man, California, I'm coming home. Oh, it gets so lonely when you're walking and the streets are full of strangers. All the news at home you read, more about the war and the bloody.
It is KZSU Stanford Radio. The show is the lunch special, heard every Monday for an hour from noon to one. We have a different professor on, and today it's Professor of Art History, Michael Marinin. And Michael, you've been really flowing with this thing, because normally I save the bottom of the hour a little time to get into our guests' particulars, and you've pretty much given up the whole story. Well, some of the story, and you're going to cover the rest in the next half hour. I know it.
Well, I don't know, but I was so nervous about coming on the air that I did my homework. You know?
Good. So that's great. I wish all the professors would do that.
Anyway, so here we are, depressed in Paris, thinking about California.
Yeah.
And the irony is that some 20 years later, I spent 12 years of my life writing a book about Paris because I love the place so much.
Oh, very cool.
So we got over that hump, so to speak, of the first years,
mm-hmm.
and managed to, in fact, speak French well enough for the Parisians to answer.
That's cool.
And I finished my research, and I came back to the United States in 1980, where I was invited to take a job at Columbia.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, look, I was a young professor, 30-some years old, teaching in a really good place back in New York, able to use the Metropolitan Museum as my classroom.
Wow.
These were very good years for me, I have to tell you.
And New York wasn't broke anymore.
And New York wasn't broke anymore, and the art scene was booming. And the next couple of songs are, in fact, about these good years. I want to start with the Talking Heads.
Oh, good.
Thank you.
little Talking Heads for your listening pleasure. And now we're going to do it. Take a little time to pick Michael Marinin's brain. If you had a professor of art history sitting in front of you and you're on the radio, I would be remiss not to get into, hey, let's talk about some art. Now,
okay,
you wanted to touch on the art scene in New York.
Yeah, well, I mean, the reason that I wanted to play the Talking Heads is because they came out of RISD, and they were really connected in the early '80s to the New York art scene. This particular album, everybody knows the usual standard cover, but there was a version that came out in a clear plastic cover that was designed by Robert Rauschenberg.
Really,
and that's the one that I have. But at any rate, the idea is that. Is that this was a kind of, for me anyway, a kind of a discovery of what you might call a music culture, art culture, big city life, in a way that I had never experienced before. Teaching at Columbia obviously brought me in contact with a lot of institutions, and I certainly met a lot of people. I had some great colleagues. And, you know, it was the kind of thing where it's a little hard to imagine this today because it's all become so business-oriented. But, you know, those are the days where you'd go down to Soho on Saturday afternoon to do the galleries, and you'd run into everybody that you knew. And it was just like a big block party.
Hmm.
And these are the moments when some really interesting work was being shown in who are now old masters, but I mean, you know, Cindy Sherman's first show, for example, was at the Metro Pictures that we saw. Anselm Kiefer's first exhibition in New York was at Mary Boone. And you felt like you're part of a world,
mm-hmm.
in an interesting way.
Had a real scene. It was a scene unto itself.
It
huh?
was. And the idea is that for me, it was really a kind of, I suppose it was a sort of coming of age, you know, where I felt, I mean, I was no longer a student. I was working like crazy because if anybody out there is listening to you and who teach, you know that the first couple of years of teaching is like nightmare because you're up all night, every night, getting classes ready. But, you know, there was a kind of energy and a sort of a vibrancy to life. It was also the beginning of a different kind of music scene. I mean, I remember Friday night, I think they were called Friday Night Videos or something like that. When the music video first really began to take off.
MTV, right?
And
right, sure.
This was kind of a deal. So it was sort of interesting to be there. And I mean, I think I bought my first television in New York at this time. Mainly, I bought it because the Minnesota Twins were in the World Series.
Aha! Uh-huh.
but nevertheless, there was a TV. So the idea is that we, meaning my colleagues and I, and there were five or six of us about the same age at Columbia at the time, we really had a kind of a group, and we were all committed to the arts in an important way. And this was, like I said, for me, this was sort of the golden period. It was really great.
Talking to Michael Marinin, professor of art history here at Stanford, with an emphasis on 18th and 19th century European arts. And you spend a lot of time in France, in Paris, huh?
Yeah, I do, as much, as often as I can, frankly.
And let's touch a little bit on these books. You've written three books, 1989, 2009, and 2010. Speak about those.
Right. My first book was really based on my dissertation research, and it was involved with history painting in France in the 19th century that was used for political purposes. The idea is that, I mean, you know, we think today the media, I mean, there was no media of the sort that we think today. That was the media. I mean, the biggest deal of the year was the annual art exhibition. So pictures had power.
Sure.
And that was my first bit of work that was published as a book.
You must have really appreciated that show at Cantor about 2 years ago.
Yes.
That was on political poster art.
Yes, yes, yes.
That was amazing.
Yeah. Organized by a friend of mine, actually.
Was it really?
And Jeff Schnapp, yeah.
That
yeah.
was amazing stuff.
So then...
2009.
Then there's a big hole. I mean, I got involved
10 years.
Almost 20. I got involved with this this love affair with Paris. I mean, I started a lot of projects. I published some articles, but the big project that was hanging over me was what to do about how I felt about the city of Paris, particularly 19th century Paris. And I got involved in a project that sort of spun out of control, frankly. But it finally was... came out last year, 2009. Stanford Press published it. It's called Romantic Paris, and I'd like it to sort of be my statement about what the city means to me after many years of working there and living there and studying its culture. And so that was a big deal. That book, it kind of brought around a certain part of my life. And then at the same time as that, I've been working for a number of years with my colleague John Bender in the English department on a completely different problem. It's much more abstract. It has to do with how diagrams convey knowledge. And that book came out earlier this year. So
what's that book called?
It's called The Culture of Diagram. And there's a kind of secret agenda there, which is to say we're actually trying to figure out something about the prehistory, we might say, of what we call today VR, virtual reality, the way we respond to screen images, which are, after all, computer-generated and based, in many cases, on mathematical formulas. So we took it back to the 18th century into Diderot's Encyclopedia. But that's another story. I mean, I'm already getting too specialized.
Is there a website where people can see all three of these?
You can go to the Stanford University Press website. Go to my personal website.
Yeah. What would that be?
Well, if you just Google me, but it's www.stanford.edu/tildemmsfo.
Okay.
And the books are there. And I also have some more of my favorite contemporary music there.
Or you can just Google Michael Marinan, Marinan, and professor of art history, our guest now. Some great music to finish up this hour. What do we got next?
Well, this is a guy. I thought I was the only guy in the world that liked Marshall Crenshaw, but
there's a few more.
I almost wore this album out. You know, this is this. I still have this one on vinyl, and I almost wore it out playing it so often. Anyway, it's a piece from that album.
Let's check it out.
When we walk together down the street, drawing fire from every eye we meet, ain't gonna bother me or you. Ooh, if we shake up their minds for a moment or two. In a barroom in the middle of town, see all the people try to stare us down. When we dance, shake up their minds for a moment or two. Only a moment, but when it's past, both sides together at last, we'll really and truly see what it is that they don't want to be. Well, 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 it's alright, we'll be long gone soon. We better look while it's opportune. Their minds for a moment or two.
up their minds, shake up their little minds, yeah, shake up their minds for a moment or two.
back here with Michael Maron and professor of art history. And Michael, you want to say a few words about that song and why you played it? Who was that?
That's Bronski Beat. It's from the album Age of Consent, and it's called Small Tone Boy. It's Jimmy Somerville. And I wanted to play it because since we're talking about the early 80s, this, of course, was an important moment in the history of New York and certainly in the moment of the gay community because it was the beginning of the AIDS epidemic. Mm-hmm. Most of my friends are gay. Most of my male friends are gay. I mean, it sounds like a stereotype, but art historians are like that.
Okay.
And
you're not all interior decorators?
No.
Okay.
Please. Anyway, and I remember some of my colleagues who were very active in the gay scene in New York in the early 80s would, you know, Monday morning was always like the stuff we did this weekend, you know, and it was always like crazy stuff. I mean, here I'm a straight white guy, you know, I don't do that kind of stuff. But anyway,
and I
remember very clearly the first time my friend Ken came to me and he said, you know, there's something going on out there. There's this weird cancer that people are getting. This was about 82, 83.
Mm-hmm.
And as you remember, it was called a gay cancer at the beginning.
Right.
And the idea was that nobody knew what was going on. And it took a huge toll. I lost a lot of friends. We lost a lot of awfully good people. And I didn't want this opportunity to slip by without reminding everybody that AIDS is still with us.
Yeah.
And it may seem like it's going underground, but it was really raw and above ground in those years.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Somerville really brought it home in his music. I think it's important for us to remember that.
Was he a victim of it too?
No.
Oh, good. Is he still around?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah. He's still making albums, but I think that these are probably the glory days.
Very cool.
Okay, so I just want to say a couple of things to introduce this next song, which is to say, in 1989, Lou Reed, my hero Lou Reed, put out an album that blew everybody away. It was called New York. It was a year in which I got my job offer to come to Stanford. And In many ways, I was tired of New York. I was burned out. And I was finally coming to California. And here's Lou on the Dirty Boulevard.
Pedro lives out of the Wilshire Hotel. He looks out a window without glass. The walls are made of cardboard. Newspapers on his feet, and his father beats him because he's too tired to beg. He's got nine brothers and sisters. They're brought up on their knees. It's hard to run when a coat hanger beats you on the thighs. Pedro dreams of being older and killing the old man, but that's a slim chance. He's going to the boulevard. He's gonna end up on the dirty boulevard. He's going out to the dirty boulevard. He's going down Dirty Boulevard. This room costs $2,000 a month. You can believe it, man, it's true. Somewhere a landlord's laughing till he wets his pants. No one dreams of being a doctor or a lawyer or anything. They dream of dealing on the Dirty Boulevard. Give me your hungry, your tired, your poor, I'll piss on them. That's what the statue of bigotry says. Your poor huddled masses, let's club them to death and get it over with and just dump them on the boulevard. Get them out on the dirty boulevard. Going out to the dirty boulevard. They're going down on the dirty boulevard. Going out. Outside, it's a bright night. There's an opera at Lincoln Center. Movie stars arrive by limousine. The Klieg lights shoot up over the skyline of Manhattan, but the lights are out on the mean streets. A small kid stands by the Lincoln Tunnel. He's selling plastic roses for a buck. The traffic's backed up to 39th Street. The TV whores are calling the cops out for a suck. And back at the wheelchair, Pedro sits there dreaming. He's found a book on magic in a garbage can. He looks at the pictures and stares up at the cracked ceiling. At the count of three, he says, I hope I can disappear and fly, fly away from this dirty boulevard. I want to fly, yeah. From the dirty boulevard, I want to fly. From the dirty boulevard, I want to fly, 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 fly. From the dirty boulevard, I want to fly away. I want to fly. Fly, fly away, yeah. I want to fly. Fly, fly away.
Yeah. Hey, Michael, isn't that a trip? You know, they say radio hours are like dog years.
Really?
Yeah, they go by real quick.
Oh, really?
I mean, didn't it? That was an hour, dude.
It did. It did go by quick.
You were a little concerned about what was going to happen during this
concerned.
Hour. Do you feel better now?
I do feel better.
And you graduated DJ class.
Thanks.
You did great, man.
Thank you. I just want to say one thing about before this last song comes on, which is to say, you know, being a professor is a weird deal because you always become older relative to your students. So when I was 31 years old, I had 10 years between myself and my students.
Right.
I have a lot more than 10 years now.
They're looking a lot younger every year,
well,
huh?
No, they don't. They always look the same. It's just you look a lot older,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah.
So I started with Dylan. I want to end with Dylan, and I want to end with this song, which sums up, I think, a little bit of the nostalgia that I feel.
Very cool. Michael, thank you very much, and you take care of yourself and stay in touch.
Thank you.
All right.
Shadows are falling, and I've been here all day. It's too hot to sleep, and time is running away. Feel like my soul has turned into steel. I've still got the scars, but the sun didn't heal. There's not even room enough to be anywhere. It's not dark yet, but it's getting late. And my sense of humanity has gone down the drain. Behind every beautiful thing, there's been some kind of pain. She wrote me a letter, and she wrote it so kind. She put down in writing what was in her mind. I just don't see why I should even care. It's not dark yet, but it's getting. London, and I've been to Gainbury. I followed the river, and I got to the sea. I've been down on the bottom of a world full of lies. was born here and I'll die here against my will. I know it looks like I'm moving, but I'm standing still. Every nerve in my body is so naked and numb. I can't even remember